Last week on In Accord, I'm sure a number of you have seen that, but Mr. Joel Meeker talked about the members in French West Africa, and he mentioned that thousands of dollars have been sent by the church to help them in their need. Apparently, they have a number of shortages of food. And we're very grateful, blessed in this country to have as much food as we do. And thankfully, the church has been blessed in this country so that we can offer that amount of money to help those fellow members and fellow brethren in those areas. You know, it's not unusual for this type of generosity to be given to fellow members around the world. We see a similar situation over here in 1 Corinthians 16. 1 Corinthians 16 and in verse 1. 1 Corinthians 16 and in verse 1. Now concerning the collection of the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. And so the other churches in Galatia, which would include Thyatira and Philippi and some of the other congregations there in Macedonia, were giving an offering. And so Paul was encouraging those in Corinth to give an offering as well. And as we see, it was in verse 3 that he would send their gift to Jerusalem. So Barnes Notes mentions this on this particular section, that the word rendered collection here in the Hebrew, I'm sorry, in the Greek, does not occur anywhere else in the New Testament but right here. And it comes from a word meaning to collect, and undoubtedly here it referred to a contribution or a collection of money for charitable purposes. And so this offering was being collected throughout the areas, and it was being gathered and put together so it could go to Jerusalem. Now, we don't know why the money was being requested. We don't know what the problem was going on. We do know that in history there were cyclical famines, and there was a famine noted earlier that occurred. But this is years later. According to some historians, the area of Judea was suffering from some political unrest at that time. So we don't know all the details behind the request for the offering, but it must have had some type of an effect on the members where they needed some help. But the point is clear, in that there were members in need, and those in Corinth and Macedonia were asked to help their fellow members. So notice now in 2 Corinthians how Paul addressed this again over here in 2 Corinthians 8 and in verse 7. 2 Corinthians 8 and in verse 7. But as you abound in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all diligence, and in your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. So he's telling that the Corinthians were abounding in faith and knowledge and love, but there was another aspect of abounding, and it was by abounding in this particular grace. So what is he talking about? Well, we have to go back to the beginning of the chapter and notice verse 1, and this is based on what we just read in 1 Corinthians 16. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. So the first emphasis was that God's grace had been given to those in Macedonia. That in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded to the riches of their liberality. So they had blessings from God. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. So here we see that this gift that they're referring to was the one scheduled to go to Jerusalem. Now, we're talking about the grace of God, first of all. And I believe we all understand what the grace of God all entails. It refers to his favor and to his graciousness, which he extends to those whom he wishes. And of course, we're not, let's say, qualified to receive that mercy and that grace, but he gives it to us anyway. And so God blesses us with divine goodness and with favor and with love. And that favor had been given to those in Macedonia. So that blessing that God had given them allowed those people there to donate a gift to those members in Jerusalem. The Greek word for abound is translated surplus, or more properly, to exceed, to go beyond measure, above and beyond, or more than. In other words, it surpasses. And that's from the Thayer lexicon. Paul is thanking them for their gift and also asking them to abound in that blessing. So we don't often think of generous giving as a specific aspect of grace. But when we look at God and we see how God is and how he expects us to be, that's an aspect of Christian living, something we're going to learn more about God today, as we heard in the sermonette. You know, the more we talk with God, the more we get to know him. And so the title of the sermon is To Abound in Generous Giving. Abound in Generous Giving. Now, let's notice something about God's character. And we find this here in 2 Corinthians 9. So let's look over here to 2 Corinthians 9 and in verse 8. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. As it is written, he has dispersed abroad, he has given to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. So this is a summary statement showing the generosity of God. He disperses abroad. He gives to the poor. And when God gives, it is done liberally, generously, and it abounds. I mean, look at all what God gives us. I mean, we've had rain today in due season. We've had sun to lighten the skies, and it was pretty hot, you know, yesterday, as Brian was bringing out. But those skies are lightened for everyone, and rain is given for everyone. And God gives us air to breathe. And even though there's this, what they call this Sahara dust cloud that's settling over the southeast United States and up into Missouri, I didn't realize that that is an ongoing thing that occurs every year. But apparently this particular year it was quite large, quite pronounced. And so the hope is that a lot of that rain that we receive is a blessing, because it'll clear out that dust from the air. But still, God gives us those things. And he gives us the not only those physical things, he gives us peace. He gives us faith. He gives us love. He gives us courage and comfort through his Holy Spirit. Now let's continue here in chapter 9, and let's look at verse 10. And notice a principle of God here. Now may he who supplies seed to the sower, so God supplies seed and bread for food, supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness, while you are enriched in everything for all liberality, which causes thanksgiving through us to God. So God gives us the ability to plant, as we heard earlier. He gives us the ability to sow seed. He gives us the ability then to reap that seed and to make bread. And that is all coming from the gift of God. He gives us the ability to share with others and to share with liberality. And so there's this agricultural principle that God is bringing out here, that you have a certain amount for seed, and then God gives us that amount for that seed to be able to use and to plant for our crops. This word for liberality is also very interesting. In the Greek, according to Unger's Bible Dictionary, it involves a generous disposition of mind. In other words, it's what we think, what we're thinking, and it's a generous disposition of mind. It results in large giving. So the state of mind is of generous giving, and it's a description of the generosity and the graciousness of God and of Jesus Christ. So let's notice what that giving does in verse 12. For the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints, but also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God. That's interesting to consider, because what we're seeing is that Paul is addressing the giving of this gift to the saints. And when the saints receive the gift, what do they do? What do we do when we receive a gift? I believe all of us very much go to God and thank Him. We thank Him for the gift. And so what Paul is saying is, when you give this gift, not only is it giving, but you are increasing thankfulness to God. Because those who receive the gift will thank God even more. And so it's a cycle of giving. We give because of what God gives us. And when we give to others, those people who receive the gift thank God. And God is praised and God is glorified. And so it's an interesting thought as to how God works and how God wants us to be part of that thanksgiving by our generous giving. So we see this a little bit more in verse 13, and let's through the proof of this ministry, they glorify God for the obedience of your confession to the gospel of Christ and for your liberal sharing with them and all men, and by their prayer for you who long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. It all goes back to God. And that when those members there in Jerusalem would receive the gift, they would thank God, but they would also thank God for the members and then pray for the members. And so even praying for one another. And as Mr. Meeker brought out in his In Accord, he talked about praying for those in need. So it's very interesting when we look at these scriptures here, because what we're doing is when we're giving, we're entering into this very special relationship with God. And that's important. There's an ancient proverb that states that when you give to the poor, you give to God, and he will repay. Now, God is saying, in that particular proverb, God is saying, I'll pay you back. I will repay you for what you do. Now, he may repay us in different ways. He may repay us with financial means, or he may repay us with comfort, which a lot of us need, especially some of the issues that, you know, we're all facing during these times. We need God's comfort. We need God's courage. We need God's protection, and we need his joy and his peace. And God is eager to give that in abundance. He's not stingy or selfish. He's very much wanting to be liberal in that giving, the liberality of that giving, of surpassing and going beyond. So let's look now at a few scriptures of instruction that we have on the instructions of giving. Let's continue here in this chapter. Let's notice verse 5. Verse 5. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation. So the first thing here, we see that it should be generous, but not feeling that you're obligated to do it, you know, grudgingly giving it. But I say, he who spares sows sparingly and reaps will reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will reap bountifully. So let each one of you give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or out of necessity, because God loves a cheerful giver. And so there's the principle of sowing and reaping. And the more we sow, the more we reap from God. When we give, we are recognizing God's hand in that whole process. We count on him to provide for us so that we can give to others. You know, we tend to think in only monetary terms, but there are other ways of giving. There are other ways of giving through service, through praying to others, through helping with special music like we just had today. Yeah, that was a gift to all of us, that the very special music today. It was a gift. It could be helping a widow. It could be giving a ride to someone. It could be giving a call to someone, or, you know, sending somebody a letter of encouragement. It doesn't always have to be the monetary terms, but, you know, that can help as well, as we saw that the church is doing for those in Africa, French West Africa. So a cheerful giver attitude is needed, and we should have that mentality in our minds. Our motives should be pure, and we should not feel guilty by doing it. There should be no guilt there. You know, all of us wish we could have so much more so that we could give more to people in need. And I know that that's something that it would be wonderful if we all had that, but we don't. And so God gives us only certain amounts, and he says, as we are able. And some are able to give a little more. Some are able very little. There's what's called the widow's two mites, like two pennies. And in God's mind, that is a gracious gift. It's the attitude of giving. That's what is most important. And the other thing is that we should make sure that our motives are pure, that we're not doing it to show ourselves better than other people. We should not compare ourselves with other people, with what they give. We shouldn't be doing that either. So what the members were doing in Macedonia and Corinth were making a personal sacrifice by sending a gift of personal aid to the saints in Jerusalem. Even though they were poor themselves in Macedonia, they were still sending a generous gift according to what they were able to do, and even beyond that. So they were ministering, they were serving their fellow brethren in another part of the world. They weren't even in Greece. They were in Judea. And they were doing so out of a generous heart. Let's look at 1 John 3, and in verse 17. 1 John 3, verse 17. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? So we can't be so jaded. We can't be so, well, that's their problem. We can't have that attitude, because something in our heart has to be affected when we see people who are in need, especially the members who are in need. And as we heard in the sermonette, there is a time to be able to give, a time to be able to help others. And I believe as time goes by, I think that's going to happen more and more, where we'll be needing to help one another in many, many different ways. But it needs to be from the heart, as we see here. Now, let's go to Ecclesiastes. We won't go to chapter 12, but we will go to the chapter right before, Ecclesiastes 11. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 11. Ecclesiastes 11, and let's start in verse 1 and 2. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days, giving a servant to serving to seven and also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. And we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you read the papers, and there's, or not the papers, but I mean, you read the news or on the internet or whatever, and you do see some very, very troubling signs for the future. We don't know how things are going to change. We would hope they would get back to a certain normalcy, but we don't know. So we've got to trust in God. But it's in this context that we're seeing that Solomon, who was a man of wisdom at that time, gave us this principle. So what he's saying is, as a principle here, we should send bread to the corners of the earth, where evil has caused much poverty and want. And you can't help but think of some of these areas, like in India and Asia and French West Africa and even Central Africa, that a lot of these people are suffering. In Kenya, suffering from not being able to have any food or buy food. And so some food has even been shipped so that they could, or rather some money to buy some food so they can have some food in those areas. So we need to be thinking about more than our own sphere of influence. We are interconnected in the church. We have our congregations here locally, but we're part of one big group. We're part of the Church of God. And the Church of God is all over the world. And there are people who are suffering in the world. And God, thankfully, has blessed us in this country so far with a lot of abilities so that we can, you know, help other fellow family members. There are really real needs in the world, physical needs. The Sansino commentary mentions this about this particular verse. It says, "Practice goodness and kindness, which a reward may unexpectedly and after a long interval may be reaped." After a long interval, it could be reaped. Now, we don't give just to get, but when we do send out bread, or we do send out some help to the four corners of the earth, that there may be a return sometime in the future. And as I said before, it may not only be monetary, it could be comfort and help and encouragement that comes from God. Last year, there was a very good sermonette on this topic that was given in St. Louis. And I want to just look at this one phrase again, give a serving to seven and to eight. Now, the Sansino commentary, Jewish commentary, says, "Practice benevolence toward as many as possible, as many as possible. Give a portion to seven to eight is a Hebrew phrase, a Hebrew saying of signifying an indefinite number." So when you have seven to eight, it's like an indefinite number. It's not, well, I'll give you seven people something, and oh yeah, you over there, I'll give you one, but that's it. No, that is a phrase that says indefinitely. Just you're not limiting yourself to what you give. Be willing to give more. Some time ago, I came across a story on the web. It was from the a story under inspirationalstories.eu, and I thought I'd paraphrase that story. It, to me, was kind of interesting. So this man was driving his car, and he saw an older lady stranded by the side of the road. And it looked like she had a flat tire, and it looked like she needed some help. So he stopped his beat-up Pontiac near her beautiful Mercedes. And he got out, and he walked over to try to help her, and he was smiling as he was approaching her. But she was kind of worried. She was an older lady. She was kind of worried that no one had stopped earlier. And this guy did not look safe at all. I mean, he had his work clothes on. He was shabby. He was dirty from work. And so she was a little nervous about him. But he could see that through her body language that she was kind of frightened. So he tried to calm her, and he said, I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you. And don't worry. My name is Brian Anderson. My name's Brian Anderson, and I'm just here to help you. So the tire was flat. And so he, got into the trunk and got the jack and jacked up the car. And it took a while to get the old tire off. And as he was changing it, he got more dirty, and his hands got, actually he hurt his hands as well, trying to pull that tire off, put another one on, and then tighten it all. Finally, the job was done. And so she asked him, well, how much do I owe you? And Brian Anderson just smiled, and he said, really, you owe me nothing. No, I don't want any of your money. Now, remember, he's driving an old Pontiac, and she's got this Mercedes. And so he said, no, but if you really want to help pay me, then the next time you see someone who needs help, give that person the assistance that you were going to give me. Well, she was really moved by his generosity and really moved by what he had said. And she thanked him profusely, and then he drove off. Well, later that evening, the older lady stopped by a small cafe, and a waitress came over, and she looked like she was 8 months pregnant, about to give a baby really soon, and she was looking totally wiped out, but she still had a smiley, friendly face and welcomed the lady. And even though the waitress had spent hours on her feet, she still showed some kindness to the lady. So after the older lady ordered her meal, she kept wondering how someone like Brian Anderson could be so kind and be so giving to a total stranger. She eventually finished her meal and paid the waitress with a $100 bill. So the waitress went back to the cash register and went to get change. And when she came back, the lady was gone. And she was kind of surprised till she looked down and she saw that there was a note on the napkin. So she picked up the napkin and it says, you don't owe me anything. Somebody help me today, and I'd like to help you. And lo and behold, when she picked up the napkin, there were another $400 under the napkin. So that night when the waitress went home, she couldn't help but think about that kind lady and about the money that was left. She was wondering, how could that lady know? How could that lady know that we've been struggling? How could that lady know that we were about to have this baby and we don't have as much funds as we really need? And so she was really glad to tell her husband about this wonderful story, about what had occurred, about this good news. And so after she was relating that, she just was so happy. She just leaned over and kissed him and said, "I really love you, Brian Anderson." I mean, it was a story, but still, it has an interesting lesson, because we don't know with what we give, maybe helping somebody, it may help us in the future. We just don't know. But I thought it was a very inspiring story. You and I are to learn the Christian principle that Paul taught in Acts 20, verse 35. Acts 20, verse 35. Acts 20, verse 35. "I have shown you in every way, by laboring like this, that you must support the weak. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus, that he said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" It is more blessed to give than to receive. Now, where can you find that in the scriptures? Where can you find that phrase? Because Paul says, "Remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" You really can't find that particular phrase in the scriptures. And one wonders if this is something that Jesus Christ taught Paul personally when Christ taught him for those many years in Arabia. But there are principles found in the Bible about this. And we see one of those. Let's look at Psalm 41. Psalm 41. Psalm 41. And beginning in verse 1, "Blessed is he who considers the poor. The Lord will deliver him in a time of trouble. The Lord will preserve him and keep him alive. And he'll be blessed on the earth. And you will not deliver him to the will of his enemies. The Lord will strengthen him on his bed of illness, and you will sustain him on his sick bed." It's the Psalm of David. There is that principle there that we find in the Old Testament. We find it throughout, as we've seen in earlier scriptures that we've read. And then we, of course, go to Matthew 25. Matthew 25. And we begin in verse 26. Matthew 25, Jesus Christ said, "I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and when you took me in." And the disciples there said, well, in verse 37, "When did we see you hungry? When did we feed you? When did we give you a drink? When did we do this to you?" And in verse 40, we see that the parable, the king answered and said, "Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of my brethren, you did it to me." You did it to me. So again, when we help and we give, and it is blessed to give more than to receive, we're seeing principles in the Bible. We're seeing principles from the Old Testament, from the time of David, and also with the example of Jesus Christ in this particular parable. So Paul was saying something absolutely true, that these are the words, this is something that Jesus Christ has emphasized and wants us to do. So how do we do that? How do we abound? How do we exceed or overflow in generous giving? How do we do that? I mean, we could think of a number of issues, a number of things we can do. There's a couple of things we can do. For instance, and this was brought out earlier, we do tithe. We do believe in tithing. We believe that the 10% is the money that God owns. That's from our increase. And of that 10%, it goes to God. And so we do give. We're giving on a regular basis to God. But so how do we abound in giving? Well, we know that a certain amount is the tithe. We're already practicing that. So abounding in giving could include, well, I'll just give a little more next time. Give a little more. And, we're not bound just by 10%. And again, it's not grudgingly, it's not out of feeling guilt, but, I really want to do this. So that's one way. That's one way that could be done. Another way is our holy day offerings. Now, they won't be collected until when we get into the holy day season at the end of September. And I know that a number of people are putting aside some money throughout the year to be able to give an offering. And so when the holy day comes, they have the money to be able to give an offering. But on the holy day, let's say we've earmarked a certain amount that we want to give. Well, again, we could give a little more. That's another way one could give more or abound more. Another way is the assistance fund or the international fund. The assistance fund is basically for those in this country, and the international fund is for those in the international areas. Jesus did say that the poor will always be with us. Many charities are not able to send the whole amount. Let's say you give a certain figure to a charity. Well, if you look at some of their financials, you will see that a lot of it goes to overhead salaries, and a lot of that donation goes not as much of that donation goes to those in need as it would be hoped it could go. And so there are fixed expenses and overhead costs. But what I like about the assistance fund and then the international fund that the church has, what I like about it is that when you put in that certain amount, that money going into that fund goes to the people in need. You see, all the other expenses and everything are taken from other parts of the, for the salaries, everything out of the first tithe. But when it comes to those international and assistance funds, those are dedicated to giving that money to those in need, to take care of whatever it costs to get that money to those who are in need. And I look at that, and at least that's how I understand it to be. There may be some residual costs that I don't know about, but I would say the great majority of those funds goes directly to those people. And I would think that, God has blessed our country so much. And when you hear about some of the fellow members in other parts of the world, I believe this is one way we can help. And again, a way we could do it. The parable of the Good Samaritan is quite instructive. We won't turn there, but, he not only bandaged the wounds, but he paid for the meals and the lodging of the person. He went up above and beyond. He went above and beyond. He abounded in giving. And he also gave comfort to the person. And that's a gift we could always abound in, to be able to give comfort. There's nothing like it to receive a comforting note or a card or a comment. And that really helps, helps in many ways. So we can't neglect that most important gift all of us can give, and that is encouragement to other people. Encouragement to other people. I know during these times we're not able to see each other on a regular basis, but hopefully we're able to give some comfort to others as we come in contact with everyone during the week. But those are some ways we can let's say abound in generous giving. Now there's another way, and that is one could directly give to those in need. You can directly give to those in need. Now, I want to bring out a couple cautions here. I think within the church, we can basically trust one another that the money that or whatever we give will be used in the right ways. I believe we can do that with one another, and that's something we recognize. But let me give you a couple of examples of what has happened. One time I came out of the restaurant, Sue and I came out of a restaurant with a number of members. I believe it was on the day of the night to be observed. We came out after having a nice big meal in this restaurant. We were all together in one meeting room, and we came out and with a number of members, and a lady came up to me and said, "You're a minister." Kind of shocked me. How did you, I don't know you from Eve. I was taken aback. How do you know? And she said, "I need help. I need help." You know, so it came as a shock, and all the other members are right around me, kind of looking, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do?" Of course, none of them volunteered to do anything. I thought, well, okay, here's the situation. She thinks I'm a minister. All right, so what do you need help with? And we gave her some money at the time. And, I found out later this woman had been going around in that area at those times as people were coming out of restaurants asking people for money. And it was a habit. And I don't know if she really needed it or not. And when you hear of stories like that, you become a little jaded. You wonder, well, should I do this or not? Another time, I was in the parking lot putting groceries in my car, and a lady came up and said, I really need money for gas. And I noticed she was out in the parking lot, and she was talking to other people, and other people were saying, no, I really need money for gas. And I thought, what are you doing? I mean, it's right on the spot. Well, thankfully, her car was right near the gas, right near the gas station was right off the edge of the parking lot in the grocery store parking lot. So I said, let's go over and let's fill your car up. So I did. I filled her car up with gas, and you know, she left. And I thought I felt better by doing it that way than just giving her some money, because sometimes money can just go for drugs or cigarettes or alcohol. And that's sometimes the case in many, many more cases than not. So one has to be circumspect. At the Feast of Tabernacles, the one year, we were all staying in this one hotel, and a lady came up to a number of members, and including us, that she had a very believable story, I felt really bad for this lady. She talked about having been stranded and that she had no food and she's got these little kids up in the room and no one's going to be asking her, well, can I see your kids? You know, you felt sorry for her and they were hungry, she said. And so, of course, the members were very generous. I know of one man who was very generous toward her and was really moved by the story. Well, we all found out later, to our chagrin, embarrassment, she was a fraud. There were no kids in her room. The hotel mentioned to all of us, through, I guess, talked to some of us, that, or at least we all heard about it, that the hotel had a problem with this lady always coming over and lying and getting money from people. And so sometimes we can be tricked. And I really felt sorry for this older man who gave her quite a bit of money. And yet, in one sense, he didn't think badly about it. I think he believed that he was doing the right thing. But we have to be circumspect. And even though we know we want to help, there are ways to do it. For a few years in one of the areas I was in, we listed our church's phone book. I mean, our church's number in the phone book, because we had a local church number. And soon we started getting calls, not to attend services or not to know a little bit more about what we believe, but for money and for food. And these calls seemed to occur more toward the end of the month, you know, when money was getting tight. So what we did, what we established, was that we, instead of giving money, cash, we would ask how much you would need in groceries. And we would go and get a bag or two of groceries and bring the bag or two of groceries over to where the person was staying. Sometimes they were staying in a motel, sometimes in a home. And if they had a couple of kids, you know, we give them more. Well, that seemed to work out okay until one time we brought over a few bags of groceries because they did have some kids and they needed some milk and everything else. And as we were unloading the, I don't know how many bags we dropped off, but as we finally were going away, is that all? Is that all? And it was like, I didn't hear any thanks. It was just, is that all? And it was getting to be more and more like that. So we eventually took our local phone number out of the book. But that experience taught me something. It taught me and made me realize how many people in the community need help. There are so many that need help. And people are relying on paycheck to paycheck, and they can't make ends meet. And we're hearing all kinds of stories about the economy and how it's going to be impacted, you know, in the next few months. So, and you saw cars on the news lined up for miles to get to food banks. I know we can't help everyone in the society, but it does show there are needs. There are needs. But the church does have something to give the world that the world is in desperate need of. And that's the truth of the promised coming kingdom of God. When we would drop food off, sometimes what I would do is have a piece of our literature ready to give them. And I couldn't remember if it was a booklet or if it was an article. Sometimes it was a booklet or an article or one of the magazines. And I would say, I know I wish we could give you some more, you know, money, but what we believe in is this promise that God will make things right in the future. And here's what we believe. And here's the information for our church. And I felt comforted by doing that, giving them that as well as what we gave. I thought they would be enlightened by it. We never heard anything from any of those people. I never did. But here's an issue to consider, that when we give our tithes and our offerings and the holy day offerings, they are so helpful because it does take money in this day and age to preach the gospel. It does take money to have the internet up and to be able to have what we're able to do for people around the world. That is a tangible that we have an opportunity to offer the truth because of our giving and our abundant giving. So finally, in conclusion, let's go to Galatians 6. Galatians 6 and in verse 10. Galatians 6 and in verse 10. Therefore, Galatians 6 and verse 10. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let's do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. To do good to all, especially the household of faith. Again, it can include giving a little extra in the tithe, giving a little extra in the holy day offering. It could be giving some to the assistance fund or the international fund. It can be given directly, but the intangible can be given as well. And that's comfort, and that's encouragement, and that's doing an errand for other people. That all can be given too. So as we've seen, generosity, liberal giving is a particular Christian grace that we should all excel in, that we should all abound in.